Good morning. It's Sunday morning, and you are listening to The Beacon. Good morning, Brian.
Good morning, lady.
Why are you stealing my papers?
Well, I was looking for my copy.
Oh, I gave you your copy. It's the bottom one, isn't it?
Oh, okay.
Yeah, do you have it?
Yes, I do.
Yeah, we're organized. We're very professional here The Beacon. Yeah. We make sure we have everything together before we actually go on the air.
Yes, we do.
How are you?
I'm doing fine. How about yourself?
Good. It's been a crazy week.
Yes, it has.
It's been a crazy week.
We've been having several of those.
I know. And you know what? This week has actually hit very close to home because the wildfires in Northern California have affected my family.
Yeah, what's the latest on that?
They're moving out of the area. So as of the end of the week, the fires were sort of moving northeast. But when the fires ignited on Sunday, that was in the hub of Sonoma County, which is where I'm from.
Mm-hmm.
My brother was evacuated at 3 a.m. and he's posted some pictures online, and you know, him getting out of his street there was fire, like firewalls around him. And so he and his family managed to get to my mom's house. My mom lives about 10 minutes south of where the fire started. And the fire started, and then they've been kind of moving north since they started. So my mom, fortunately, was never in any imminent danger. She was never evacuated, but I have many, many friends who lost their homes. Like, I don't know if you've seen pictures online, but it looks post-apocalyptic. I mean, the entire, like, neighborhoods were just burned to the ground. And it's not even like structures are still standing or the bones of homes are still standing. It is like everything is just ash for miles and miles and miles. And it demolished complete neighborhoods. Obviously on my Facebook feed, most of my contacts are in, or not most, but half are in Sonoma County. And so my news feed has just been completely full of just these heartbreaking stories of people who have lost everything and people that I've known who have lost everything. And
now the fires, are they a result of the Santa Ana winds? Is that anything to do with
it? No, the Santa Ana winds are down in Southern California. Okay. So there have been some fires down in Southern California. The ones up north were a result of, from what I've heard, a result of some power lines that were faulty. And I don't know, I don't think they've been able to identify the exact source, but I've heard rumor that PG&E is being blamed for it. Or there's starting to be noise being made about PG&E being at fault. If that's the case, you know, I mean, I think the count currently is 33 people have died, and there's still 400 or 500 people that have been reported missing, and thousands of people are without homes.
Well, I've heard about the fires, but I haven't followed it. Why is it that they can't put the fire out?
Because it's massive. It's massive, and it's been hot and dry, and it's been windy there as well. And so what's happening is, you know, the fires are ignited in one area, and then the embers float to another area. So there's been, I mean, at any given time, more than a dozen fires burning that the firefighters have had to get containment of. And it's just been the conditions have made it impossible for them to contain it. So it just keeps burning. I mean, when it hits close to home, and this is kind of what I was saying about the apathy, but when it hits close to home, and it's, I mean, my childhood has been leveled. Like, I think about where I grew up and where I went as a child. And, you know, one of the theaters that I had performed in growing up, which helped make me who I am today, is fortunately, I had originally heard that it was gone. It was burned, but not completely destroyed. So there's, you know, it can still be salvaged. But when I had heard that it was gone, like, it just was like a stake through my heart. You know, it was really, really, it was just very sad and very emotional.
Out of the ashes of all of that, obviously, I think that area will rise again, and people will overcome and survive.
I think so. I mean, if anything, there's resilience and there's strength and there's generosity that comes from these types of tragedies. And, you know, and again, it's, you sort of have to look at the beauty in that and have faith that everybody in that region of the world right now is lifting each other up. Everybody's in this together. You know, and there's strength that comes from that. So I do think that it will take a while to rebuild, but I think that it will rebuild and it will still be a beautiful area of the world. And, you know, I don't know. I don't really know what else to say about it, but
well, I'm sure that your memories will suffice and everything that has been burned away, but it'll still be in your mind.
Yeah. Thank you. I appreciate that. And that's what we're holding on to.
Now, if you do need some good news, I think first segment might be able to help. Talking about who's going to be on the show today, the Chicago Blackhawks Special Hockey Organization.
That'll lift some spirits.
That should lift some
spirits. People like the Blackhawks.
Now, yeah, but this isn't the team that you are familiar with, the three-time NHL champions. This team is dedicated to providing children and adults with developmental disabilities the opportunity to play hockey.
Oh, cool. Is it a league or is it like...
Yeah, they do have a league.
Okay.
And this team is affiliated with the Blackhawks.
Cool.
So they have their Blackhawk jerseys and some of the players have come out to give them some pointers and tips and all those things.
What a great opportunity for, you know, for kids and adults with developmental disabilities.
Mm-hmm.
And then coming out of that, we have Suzanne Haverkamp, who is a researcher for Ohio State.
Nisonger
Center. And she has conducted a study about the difficulties people with developmental disabilities have accessing healthcare. So if we imagine that, you know, people without disabilities and our healthcare crisis right now, imagine how much worse it must be for people with disabilities.
Right, and we'll hear about that.
Yeah.
And something that we've been promising everyone since we started the show, giving you an update on the Lighthouse's designer clocks and where you can get them. Our very own president and CEO, Dr. Janet Slick, and our COO, Pam Tully, will talk about that. You know, I thought they were like the president and vice president, where they couldn't be at the same place at the same time.
And they could never see them together.
Except for the State of the Union address in Washington. But our crack security allowed that to happen.
Wow.
So they're here to talk about that. And also, they have an exclusive. And I recorded the interview, but I didn't listen to the whole thing, so I don't know what the exclusive is.
Oh, wow. Well, I wonder what the Secret Service for them being in the same room is costing the taxpayers. But I'm sure it'll be good.
Nothing.
Good. That is good news. That's another bit of another bright spot in
more
the week.
Tax relief.
More tax relief. Awesome.
All right.
And then we've got the Spooktacular event and the Sip for Sight, and we'll tell you a little bit more about that. That's through the Lighthouse. And then I will be here with Let Us Turnip the Beat.
And we may or may not have Luke's Laboratory.
Oh, all right. So we will remain to be seen, I suppose.
All right. So we'll get all of that on the other side of this break. This is The Beacon on WCPT 820.
The Lighthouse Endowment Campaign is an ongoing campaign to help secure the future of the Chicago Lighthouse for the 67,000-plus patients, clients, and families that utilize our services each year.
Yeah, I have an undergrad from DePaul Computer Information Systems and a master's in Business Information Technology. And I know I have a disability, and it can be challenging trying to get a position. You know, they want to hire someone with a disability. So that was one of the challenges I had also. Going to a job interview and people look at you strange because you have a disability. I've gotten frowned at. They'll say, we'll call you or we'll consider, but it never happened. The Lighthouse has provided me with employment. I've been here since 2013, November. I've grown. I transitioned from Illinois Tollway to UI Health. The Lighthouse is awesome. They really work with people with disability, visually impaired, and veterans, get employment, you know, find employment, because the percentage of people with disability is unemployed is extremely high. People that have degrees and they still can't find a job. So the Lighthouse is very supportive and helping them find employment. One word, I say awesome.
Historically, our endowment fund has helped maintain critical programs on the verge of shutting down, preserve jobs in times of economic stress, and meet the growing demand for vision care services among America's aging population. To make a contribution, please contact Jennifer Miller, 312-997-3643.
Well, hockey season is upon us, and we'll be rooting for the success of our favorite teams. The Chicago Blackhawks special hockey team provides children and adults with developmental disabilities the opportunity to play hockey. Melanie Freeman, director of the Chicago Blackhawks special hockey team, joins us. Good morning, Melanie. Thanks for joining us.
Good morning.
Who would qualify to join the special hockey team? Which developmental disabilities are team members affected by?
Well, we're looking for players that have cognitive disabilities that prohibit them from playing on a regular hockey team. They have to have the reasonable ability that they will learn to skate, but we take people that don't know how to skate yet and teach them how to skate and play hockey.
Do they get to a level of proficiency in terms of skating, stick handling, passing the puck, and those kinds of things?
Absolutely. You know, there's a lot of special hockey teams all through the United States, and when we come together, we rank our players. So it's A, B, C, where C would be a beginner player, B is kind of middle of the road, and A is pretty highly skilled. They can skate backwards, and they understand the game. And we have all levels of players on our team.
What age groups?
We start our players at age 5. They have to be 5 years old to start, and there is no ending age. Our oldest player right now is 57 years old on ice with us.
Team is officially a part of the Chicago Blackhawks organization. How did that come about?
Well, we're an official Blackhawks charity, and 18 years ago, the team was started by a really great friend of mine, Amy LePoe, and she hooked up with the Blackhawks, and at that time, we were called the Tomahawks. And then, I think, probably about 3 years ago, the Blackhawks went ahead and put us under their umbrella, so we're the Chicago Blackhawks special hockey team now.
Now, there's also a team for individuals that are either blind or visually impaired.
Absolutely. We started that team 2 years ago, so the Chicago Blackhawks blind hockey team. They just got back from a tournament in Pittsburgh, I believe. But it's a brand new team. They're welcoming new players, so if somebody has a visual impairment, come on out.
Where do you hold most of your games?
For the special hockey, well, we have rinks that we practice and play out of, and we'll practice out of our Center Ice in Glen Ellen, Arctic Ice in Orland Park, and right now McFetridge in Chicago. But in December, we'll be at the new Blackhawks community rink.
Obviously, there must be some differences in how you run your games as opposed to the games that are run by the teams featuring blind individuals. Can you describe what your games are like?
Sure. Well, our games we run it typical. And a lot of times, if we're playing with other disabled players, then it's just a regular game. They score it, and, you know, it's the same. If we're playing, sometimes we'll have typical teams want to play with us or against us. And typically what we do then is we will split the team. So it's half of their players with half of ours on both sides. And, you know, that works out really well. It gives everybody a great opportunity, and it's a great exchange between players.
And how about for the individuals who are blind? How do they navigate the ice?
You would be surprised. If you're watching the blind players play, sometimes it's hard to tell that they're blind. But they have a different puck. Their puck is larger, it's metal, and it has ball bearings in it so they can hear it. And there are some different rules. Their net is a little shorter. There's a different whistle that blows when they cross center ice. And I don't have all the details on that, but it's different. And if you watch it, though, and watch them playing, they're fast. Sometimes it's difficult to tell that they're blind.
Or have you played the game yourself?
I personally have never played the game. My background is I've been with the team for 15 years, and I got started on the team because I have a son who, he's 25 now, and when he was younger, he was just enamored with hockey, and we used to put a rink in the backyard, and he would play in the backyard, and then he came in and told me, when I get to high school, I'm going to play on a hockey team. And honestly, I didn't know how I was going to make that happen. And I researched it, and I found, at that time, they were called the Tomahawks, and Amy LePoe was running the team. And we've been part of it for 15 years. It's just in the last, this is my second year running the team, and Amy's still involved, but she is actually traveling around. She works with USA Hockey, and she's traveling around helping to start more teams like this around the country.
So anyone hearing this and they feel that they'd like to have a member of their family become a part of the team, what should they do?
I would tell them to come onto our website, which is www.chicagospecialhockey.com. There's some application forms to fill out. They do have to have some kind of a cognitive disability. And what we'll do is we'll schedule them to come out, do an observation, meet with the coaches. And then if it's a good fit for everybody involved, we'll have them start. And it doesn't matter if you know how to skate or not. We teach people to skate all the time.
Well, thank you very much, Melanie, for stopping by and talking about the Chicago Blackhawks special hockey team. Good luck to you.
Well, I appreciate it. Thank you very much for having me.
Well, how about that, huh?
I love it.
Chicago Blackhawks special hockey organization.
I think it's wonderful. I think it's wonderful when these, you know, big sports teams are willing to be advocates and mentors, you know, for people who would have a hard time having that opportunity otherwise. I think that says a lot about the team, and it's, I think it's very nice that they are providing this opportunity for, you know, for kids and adults to play.
And, you know, during the segment, of course, we did mention the blind hockey team because that's an offshoot of the special hockey organization. But we didn't mention any contact information. So if you...
That would be helpful.
Yeah. If you would like to get in touch with them, they do have a website, chicagoblackhawksblindhockey.com.
I love that. Cool. All right. Moving on, right? All moving right. On up. Next up, we have Suzanne Haberkamp, who is the researcher for Ohio State Nisonger Center, who is conducting a study on the difficulties of people with disabilities and how they are struggling to get health care coverage. So we'll hear from Suzanne about that.
And after that, Brett and Sandy.
Brett, Sandy, Brandy.
Well, everyone, we have all heard about the different needs that community across the United States has in regards to healthcare and the different difficulties that perhaps some individuals have accessing even the most basic type of healthcare. A recent research study shows just how large the disparities are among people with different developmental disabilities and their access to healthcare. Joining us to talk more about that today, this morning, is Suzanne Haberkamp, who is from Ohio State University, who did this research, and she'll be talking to us a little more about her findings. Suzanne, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me and for highlighting this research.
Now, we mentioned the term developmental disabilities. What kind of disabilities do these include?
Generally, developmental disabilities are severe chronic conditions. They impair cognitive or physical functioning, mm-hmm. and it's considered a developmental disability because it happens during the developmental period.
Okay.
So you have to see evidence of a problem before the age of 22,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
and it needs to be severe enough that it affects functioning in at least three major activities of daily living and require assistance throughout the lifespan.
Mm-hmm.
So we're talking about things like cerebral palsy or intellectual disability,
sure.
autism, those types of conditions.
One of the findings that I found particularly alarming is the fact that the older the individuals got, the more disparity there was between their access to healthcare. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, that was one thing that surprised us.
Mm-hmm.
Honestly, when we started this study, we were interested in comparing children.
Sure.
And then older kids, young adults in the period of time where they're transitioning from their pediatric care providers to adult care providers. And we've all done that, but for kids with disabilities, that can be really challenging to find an adult health care provider who knows anything about your developmental condition and who's willing to care for you. And so our prediction, honestly, was that the kids, young adults in that transition age would have the most barriers. And then we also had a group of adults and adults age 31 to 64 and then older adults, older than 65. And we looked at a number of different indicators, health status, health utilization of the hospital or emergency department, and we had a number of quality indicators that we were interested in, and just access to care indicators. And for several of them, as you said, we found that the adults and often the older adults had more barriers, had more trouble accessing quality care than the younger kids.
And what were some of those barriers?
You know, one thing that was great about using existing data is that we had access to a large data set and a lot of really interesting data. The disadvantage is that we were limited to the questions that were on the survey.
Sure.
And so I can tell you, participants were asked, does your primary care physician usually or always spend enough time with you? Mm-hmm. And for that question in particular, we found that the older age group, the adults older than 65, were much less likely to say that, their physician spends enough time with them.
Sure.
So that was something that we were concerned about. And that was true for the developmental disability group and not for the no disability group. And
really?
So we're comparing things between people who do and do not have developmental disability and then between age groups.
Hmm.
And it was particularly the older adults with developmental disabilities who really struggled with that one.
What can the medical field itself, medical providers, you know, meaning doctors, nurses, anyone involved in the medical field, combat or address this problem?
I think the most promising solution is for healthcare providers to get some training on disability.
Sure.
And we're working really hard to have opportunities during medical and nursing school for students to have some experience talking with people who have disabilities and caring for patients with disabilities so that they can learn about the disability, but mostly kind of challenge their own assumptions and biases about people with disabilities so that they feel more comfortable caring for patients and they can do a better job when they're practicing.
You know, that's a great point because I myself am totally blind and I see it all the time, you know, in the medical field whenever I go to a doctor's appointment or even the nurses, they might, for example, address whoever I'm with or they might not know how to interact with me or, you know, explain things to me. So I think that's very, that'll become critical, especially in the upcoming years with the aging of the baby boomers and just the different needs in the community.
That's right. And I don't know what your experience has been, but it seems to me that a lot of the problem is just an anxiety on the part of the healthcare provider. They're just kind of nervous about what to do and how to act, and it gets in the way of them really thinking through the clinical situation and providing
Absolutely.
Good care.
Absolutely. And that's why, you know, like you mentioned, it is so important for medical students to learn how to interact and be comfortable around people with also all types of disabilities.
Exactly. Yeah. And to ask you, I'm sure you're perfectly able to tell your providers what it is that you need and what you're concerned about.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
But they need to know that they should ask you.
Absolutely.
Instead of assuming that you're not able to provide that information.
Exactly. And, you know, that's the case with a lot of other people with, you know, different disabilities.
Yes.
Well, Suzanne, is there anything else you want to add or share?
We also asked about unmet healthcare needs.
Sure.
In addition to accessing healthcare, we asked if there were things that the participants were not able to get.
Uh-huh.
And again, we don't know why they weren't able to get some of these services. We wondered if it had to do with insurance coverage, and we compared that, and we found that it wasn't. Even people who had insurance coverage reported that they had real problems accessing, for example, dental care, vision care, prescription medication care, almost everything. And that was really across the age range.
Mm-hmm.
So patients with developmental disabilities, even though for the most part they qualify for Medicaid insurance and they have Medicaid, they're still experiencing problems accessing this care. And I think it would be beneficial to take a closer look at the insurance coverage and find out how much patients are having to pay out of pocket, even when they have insurance coverage.
Oh, absolutely. I
know particularly adults, Medicaid varies by state, but in Ohio, doesn't really cover oral health care for adults.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So I imagine that's a significant barrier for that group.
Very much so. Since Medicaid is one of the primary ways that people with different disabilities can access health care, it's one of the primary ways of them getting their health care needs met. You know, I imagine that that's part of why you analyzed
Yeah, you're right. Medicaid is incredibly important for people with disabilities.
And
let me just clarify that although this survey is called the Medicaid Assessment Survey, that's because the state Medicaid office funds the survey to a large extent. We survey people who receive Medicaid insurance benefits and people who aren't on Medicaid, people who have private insurance or no insurance.
That's a great point. You know, it's healthcare can be challenging for anyone, but even more so in the case of individuals with these disabilities. Does your department plan to expand more on this research?
Yes, we would love to do more analysis of this data. Like I said, Ohio continues to collect this data every year, and we're really interested in the opportunities that that provides, looking at changes over time as Medicaid evolves, as particularly the Ohio expanded Medicaid a few years ago. And so we're looking forward to analyzing that to see how that benefited people with disabilities in particular.
Oh, absolutely. It'll become more important in, you know, the near future with all of the conversation around healthcare, you know, that's been going on.
Yeah. Well, we hope to inform that conversation with this data.
Well, Suzanne, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
Great. Everyone, we'll be right back.
Today, the unemployment rate for veterans is at an all-time high, and these brave men and women need our help. To meet this challenge, Paralyzed Veterans of America created Operation PAVE, an employment assistance program for any veteran at the Hines VA in Chicago. Through a partnership with Agility DGS, these services are provided free of charge. Hiring more veterans is great for business and great for our nation. To learn more, visit OperationPAVE.org. A public service message from Paralyzed Veterans of America.
Well, we're back, everyone. Welcome. I am Sandy Murillo.
And I am Brett Shishkoff.
Brett, how are you?
I am doing fantastic. How about yourself?
I am actually doing pretty good, too. I'm very excited. A couple days ago, I received the Ira Smart Glass.
Okay.
I know that Luke mentioned it in Luke's laboratory.
Mm-hmm.
And for those of you that might not be familiar, it's a very cool concept. It's a pair of Google Smart Glasses. But you can call and what they call an IRA agent. You know, in other words, another person who can see, you know, the glasses, first of all, they have a camera incorporated into them. And they can see, you know, what you are looking at. You know, so in other words, if I'm out on the street, lost somewhere, which, you know, can happen when you're blind.
What? We get turned around as blind people? No. Liar. And it happens to me on a daily basis that I get turned around. So it's always good to have somebody to get us back on track.
So essentially what this does is that, you know, the
agent can guide you. You know, you can tell them like, hey, I'm a little turned around. Can you please tell me, you know, how to get to such and such building or to such and such street? And, you know, we'll revisit this spread, but from what I've tried it out, I've had a agent describe that, like the layout of my room at mm-hmm. my home. And,
yep.
you know, she described the pictures I have and my diploma from U of I. That was neat. So we'll visit it more because I'll be definitely be exploring around. And how's Mr. Power? How are things going with Mr. Poet?
It's been going okay. One of the days this week, we actually took a little bit of a spill. He was trying to navigate me around, I believe, somebody who was walking towards us. And in doing so, he moved me off of the normal sidewalk onto what was like a little bit of a decline going towards the street.
Sure.
And the pavement was uneven. And so I twisted my ankle and then fell and kind of toppled over my right shoulder, landed on my arm. And when trying to like catch myself, I twisted my right ankle and then hurt my left foot. And so it was a bit tingly throughout the day after it happened. And so, yeah, kind of a little bit hobbled. But other than that, I'm doing mainly okay.
Well, here's my important question, Brent.
Yep.
Is Poet okay?
Poet is fine. I think he was a little concerned about me because I was I still had to walk to work. So I still had 2 blocks to walk after twisting my ankle and hurting my foot. So
absolutely.
We were moving a bit slower, and he kept looking back at me like, you okay? He could tell that I wasn't doing very well. When I fell, I dropped his leash and the harness handle, and I was glad he didn't run away. He stayed. And then a couple people stopped and checked on me, and I had to take my time getting back up. And once they gave me Poet back, he just was kissing me all over, like, I'm sorry, you know, like, are you okay? You can tell that he was really concerned. And so it was good, and we had a couple good Samaritans who were able to make sure I was doing okay. I got a little lightheaded when I got up a little too fast, so I just kind of kneeled back down and took a couple deep breaths and and hobbled my last 2 blocks to work and finished out the day.
But you still made it to work on time.
Mainly on time. I was maybe a few minutes late because I was hobbling. But for the most part, I got here in one piece. But yeah, it was a little bit of a slower trek than we normally take. Mm-hmm. But it was good. But yeah, moving on, I actually...
Speaking of being on time.
Right? Yeah, being on time, we have a rest of a show to get to. I was able to interview Dr. Janet Slick and Pam Tolley, which Dr. Slick is our CEO, and our CEO, Pam Tolley. And we got to talk about the partnership with the Target Clocks, that we have a new partnership with them. And so we kind of go into a little bit more detail. And why don't we just take a listen and let the interview speak for itself.
The Lighthouse has been very active with our fashionable clocks. Did you want to kind of touch on our partnership that we've just started with Target a little bit? And maybe we can get a little history on how these clocks have came about. I think, Pam, you said that you would cover that, right?
Yep.
Okay.
So, in general, we've been manufacturing clocks. I don't know if your listening audience knows, since 1977, so we're celebrating our 40th anniversary. And for our 40th anniversary, we wanted to do something really special.
Mm-hmm.
And that was to expand our clock line and make them a little bit different and unique for the 40th anniversary. So we thought about producing a fashion-forward line. This idea also came to us from one of our board members of Chicago Lighthouse Industries, a gentleman by the name of Ted Wecker, very talented a businessman from Skyline Furniture Industries. And so he makes upholstered furniture, and what he likes to do is keep things fresh, change the inventory quarterly, and make it fashion forward.
Mm-hmm.
And his items are sold by Restoration Hardware, Macy's, Neiman Marcus, Wayfair. Right. He's everywhere. And so he gives us great business advice. And that's the case with most of our board members. So he said, you got to make it fresh. You got to change it up. And so we've done that, Brett, in a big way. And that's developing a line of clocks in collaboration with a very talented designer, Nancy Perkins, from Nancy Perkins Designs.
Okay.
And she had experience designing clocks for a company in Chicago. She was also knew the blindness community through her role as CEO of the Dallas Lighthouse.
Oh, very nice.
So she had resigned from that position a few years ago and went straight into design. And so I knew to call her when we were looking for a designer for clocks. Long story short, in August, we debuted our line of fashion clocks in Target, in three Target stores.
Okay.
And we also have a storefront where we sell them on Amazon. Mm-hmm. And so Pam can tell you about the productions of the clocks. We're just so excited about the partnership and how philanthropic Target is.
Okay. Yes, thanks, Janet. Target has been fabulous, and I can't say that enough. I mean, they've really partnered with us on a number of different fronts. So not just saying, hey, we think you guys are making a great product, and we'd really like to sell that product in our stores, but all of the processes that go into making that happen, they've worked with us step by step along the way. Mm-hmm. So we, as Janet said, we've been making clocks for a very, very long time, and what we're trying to do now is make sure that we can make those clocks, and if you need one of these or two of these or three of these and then back to one of another one, mm-hmm. we can do that. So we've adapted our internal processes to allow us to be able to respond very quickly. When you talk about fashion forward and you talk about people changing their rooms or college students, you know, being in a different dorm every year and wanting something new and something different, mm-hmm. our ability to quickly be able to respond to those requests and get those clocks out, you know, get an order in, get that produced, to get that shipped to a Target and or an Amazon customer within a 24-48 hour period is really the way that we're going to be able to be very successful in the business.
Excellent. And a lot of these clocks, I believe all of them are handmade here at the Lighthouse.
That's correct.
And we have a very, very talented group of people that are in our industries department that are working on that every single day.
That's correct. Mm-hmm. Yes, we do. We have, what, Jana, 25
people.
25 employees that work in our industries area. 85% of those people are legally blind. Several of our clock assemblers who spend all of their time assembling clocks, that the handmade assembly of those clocks are 100% blind. Mm-hmm. So it's a very, very cool process. The tools that we have to use, the staging of our work and the material and all those things that go into giving them the best opportunity, the best process for them to produce clocks that are incredibly well made. We have a year warranty in our clocks, which is kind of unheard of if you look at a lot of the other clocks that are out there on the market. And we do not have a significant amount of clocks that come back because we make them right the first time.
Okay. And right now they are in three Targets, correct?
That's correct.
And what are those locations?
They are in the Division Street Target. It's Division and Larrabee. They're in the Elston Ave Target.
Okay.
And they are also, we have one out in the suburbs in Wheaton.
Okay.
And the Elston store, I heard, because we had an open house last weekend, mm-hmm. is the fifth busiest Target in the country.
Oh, excellent.
And I could see that because we had a lot of people that were coming by our table. We had a book signing for Larry Brotman, who is mm-hmm. a Lighthouse board member, author, photographer. He's written several books, including Chicago Unleashed and Chicago Monumental, which are great coffee table books and highlight and showcase the monuments and the buildings that make Chicago so iconic. And so he was there to sign copies of the books. The books he has donated to the Lighthouse. The mm-hmm. proceeds go to the Chicago Lighthouse and another great Chicago not-for-profit, Access Living.
Excellent.
And we have made some clocks using some of Larry's images. And so you'll see the Lions of the Art Institute.
Mm-hmm.
And you'll see some of the famous landmarks and tombs. I know the Getty Tomb is yeah. one of the clocks that we've made. Just some historical items that you'll see in these beautiful plates that are incorporated into clocks and sold in the book section of Target. So we're in three places in mm-hmm. those three Target stores. So that's easy for your listeners at the Elston store, at the Division store, and in Wheaton. And in the book section, you'll find Larry's clocks and you'll find the books. And we're at the children's section. We have a line of children's clocks for your baby, infants, or toddler's room.
Very cool.
And then we have a line for more adult-oriented rooms, kitchens, and offices. And they're truly beautiful.
Yeah, I know we kind of brag about it here at the Lighthouse a little bit, but we've had our clocks actually with President Obama. He actually had a clock of ours. I believe it was in the Oval Office with him. So that's kind of exciting that we've been in the Oval Office at one point, at least through the clocks. So
through the clocks, yes, we're pretty much everywhere. We like to text pictures of our sightings, our clock sightings. They're everywhere. Mm-hmm. I mean, I was skiing up in Bretton Woods, New Hampshire, on holiday, and there was a clock right when I was getting on the lift, in the lift line. I saw a lighthouse clock. We have a clock that's in the 9/11 Museum, a photograph of the clock that was found in the remains at the Pentagon when at 9/11. And it's in the 9/11 Museum along with the seatbelt from the flight that went down in Pennsylvania in a Pennsylvania field.
Mm-hmm.
So we are part of the fabric of America. Our clocks are American made by people who are blind. They're very special. And we still have considerable clock sales. They have not declined. People still need to tell time. They need to teach their children to tell time. It's not all digital, although we do sell digital clocks. Right, Pam?
That's right. That's right. And I mean, Janet's absolutely right. We've talked about it for several years now that, okay, you know, people don't really buy wall clocks anymore and everybody uses their phone, or now you have an iWatch, and, you know, those clock sales, we're going to have to make sure that we're on top of that. But we have not seen a large decline in our clock sales at all. So we continue to produce, you know, between 170,000 and 200,000 clocks a year.
So I'm imagining that now our listeners are probably wondering, okay, well, how much do these clocks actually cost? And if they're not in an area where it's a Target availability, would they be able to get it anywhere else, the clocks themselves?
Yes, they would be able to get them on Amazon. We have a storefront on Amazon. So, but when you go onto the Amazon website, you want to make sure that you type in Amazon and then / Chicago Lighthouse Industries.
Okay.
Because that's where you'll land on our landing page, which has our entire inventory. There are other distributors that sell on Amazon and sell our clocks because we're all over with a number of different distributors. But if you really want to go and see our fashion clocks and the full line, you need to go to our landing page, and that's Chicago Lighthouse Industries.
Okay, very good.
Okay.
And then the clocks are $39.99, is that correct? I believe that's what
I heard. There's a range depending upon the frames, but they typically, the children's clocks are so our clocks start at $29.99.
Okay.
And then go up from there. Is that a reasonable assessment, Pam? Yeah.
Yes, that is.
Okay, very good. So if anybody had any, like, requests, how could they be able to get a hold of either Industries or someone here at the Lighthouse to be able to ask any questions of maybe they want to buy a whole bunch of clocks? How would they be able to do that?
Well, they would contact our number at the Lighthouse, which is 312-666-1331, and ask for Heidi Ashwell. And she is the director of operations in our Industries program. She would be able to help you in getting a clock.
Excellent. Well, I think that's about it. That's all the questions I had for both of you. I want to thank you once again for coming in. I definitely enjoyed your company, and hopefully we'll have you guys come in again later on down the line, and we can talk about something else that's wonderful that the Lighthouse is doing. How's that sound?
Absolutely. It's always a lot of fun.
All right.
Thanks, Brett.
Thank you.
Thanks, Brett.
This is Brett Shishkoff, and you are listening to The Lighthouse Beacon.
I'm Lainey Kleeman. We haven't even introduced ourselves. We're like two-thirds of the way through the show. Hopefully you know who we are by now.
I'm Brian
And
Hawkins.
You are?
Yeah, if you don't know, but I think maybe they do.
Can I say
that without sounding conceited?
Yes, only because we're like it's two-thirds of the way through the show, and we're just now getting into it. So hopefully, like, something clicked in. There were some like association of who we are.
All right.
So we are, we're The Beacon, and you can hear us this morning, obviously, if you're here, 7:30 a.m. on Sundays. Starting in November, we'll be back to Saturdays, but for the
rumor has it,
don't quote me on that. But for now, we're here on Sundays, and you can also catch us Wednesdays. What time Wednesdays on Chris?
7 o'clock.
7 o'clock on Chris Radio. So that's chicagolighthouse.org/radio.
That is correct.
Correct. And then we are also on podcast on the Lighthouse website as well.
Right. You can go to Chris Radio's page and then hit podcasts and it will be there.
Right. And you can listen to that at your convenience, mm-hmm. which is what I do.
In case you're like me and you wake up late Sunday morning and you're like, oh, I missed the show.
I know. I actually set my alarm for it a couple weeks ago. And I mean, I literally wake up at 5 a.m. every morning. And for some reason, I slept until like 8:10 on this particular morning and totally missed the show. I slept through my alarm, which I don't think has ever happened in my entire life. So if that happens, then, you know, you can just catch it the next day on the podcast. So with that said, we do have a couple Lighthouse events we would like to discuss. Do you want to start it off?
I sure will. The first event is the Sips for Sight, a wine, beer, and spirits tasting event. And that benefits the Lighthouse Children's Programs. Vice Chairman of the Junior Board, Joel Bruckman, sat down with Sandy, and he had this to say.
So we're very excited about the upcoming Sips for Sight event. So this is actually going to be the third year that we're holding this event. It originally began as a way to provide an additional networking event for interested individuals who may be looking to join, a philanthropic board, or mm-hmm. who are interested specifically in the junior board for the Chicago Lighthouse.
Sure.
And what we found is this overwhelming support, and we built into this event very similar to our Sweets for Sight event that takes place in February each year. A fundraising mechanism to help generate additional revenue, because if we're going to have another great event with great support, we want to make sure that at the end of the day that the Lighthouse is receiving a benefit from it. So just last year, our event actually generated just under $5,000 in net profit that went directly back to the Lighthouse towards its resources and services. So the event's coming up at the Erie Cafe. It's going to take place on Wednesday, October 18th from 5:30 to 8:30 p.m. Mm-hmm. So we are selling tickets both online right now, individually and in sets of 10 as group tickets. Individually, the tickets are $40. Mm-hmm. And for a group of 10 tickets, it's $350. We will be providing spirits and heavy appetizers, and we hope to see everyone there. I know that this year in particular, we have some great giveaways mm-hmm. That our guests will be able to take home with them, as we have in years past. But we've added some new ones for this year, and it's just going to be a wonderful event, and I look forward to meeting new people and seeing everyone there. There's complimentary parking for those who wish to drive to attend, and the Erie Cafe, for those who haven't been, just has a phenomenal setting in their back room, which is the same location that we've used for all of the SIPS events prior to this year, and it just creates a great atmosphere for people to, you know, to chat and talk about, you know, the Lighthouse and what's new at the Lighthouse and what we're doing, you know, to move our objectives forward, and, you know, for people after work to, you know, relax and make new acquaintances. Our hope is in our efforts of this, as I said, it originated as a network event to attract individuals to the junior board. So our hope is to find new, passionate individuals who may want to, you know, come to a meeting after that event and possibly become part of our team on the junior board towards our mission.
And if you'd like tickets for that event, just call Lindsay Inglis at area code 312-447-3448. That's area code 312-447-3448. And you also can get tickets at the Chicago Lighthouse website, which is chicagolighthouse.org.
I love seeing the kiddos around here. They're so cute. Mm-hmm. They are the cutest. There's the playground out in front of the lighthouse. And when I come and they're outside playing, it just makes my whole day. So it sounds like a great event.
Yes.
Cool. Let us turn up the beat.
Wow. See, that's how I did that, made you introduce yourself.
I did. That feels a little funny. I feel a little like, oh, I'm introducing myself. Aren't I special?
Well, but today, you know, it's a mystery because you did not give us an update.
I didn't give you a preview
of what it would be.
I didn't. And this week is not as fun, but I think it's important. We're going to talk about reasons why we should quit sugar now, which is hard for me because I am a sugar addict. And I've talked about that before. Like, I am literally a sugar addict. You know, there was some days before I started my evolution into yoga and veganism that I would just eat nothing but desserts all day long. And it's amazing that I'm not sick, or I mean, I don't know. I'm amazed that I'm kind of still standing as healthy as I am, because I wasn't great to my body, and I still have days where I'm not. So this is kind of an important one that sort of hits close to home, and just kind of a reminder of what sugar does to us. That's not good. Number one, it's a primary cause of diabetes. So if you have a diet high in sugar, then there is a chance that it could lead to diabetes at some point. And I also see a lot of that in my profession of being a sign language interpreter. I interpret a lot of doctor's appointments, and you know, it's kind of a daily finger stick and insulin injection, and it's not a great fun way to live life. So that's one big reason to quit sugar. Number two, it slows you down. Obviously, like on my days when I have big sugar intakes, then all I want to do is sleep all day. And that feels awful, like super unproductive. And I can't function as a mom, and it just doesn't feel good. But, you know, the addiction is strong, and, you know, but it will slow you down, and it will make you feel pretty crummy. And number three, it puts a damper on your ability to think. So your mind is real cloudy and foggy, and you can't get a kind of clear and concise thought. And it's, you know, it's so true. Like on days when I'm eating poorly as opposed to days when I'm eating well, it's like night and day in terms of how I feel. And it's quick. I mean, it doesn't take a long time to get from feeling good to feeling bad, or feeling bad to feeling good. It's a day or two of getting the sugar out of your system, or having the sugar sit in your system. It makes you eat more. It has no nutritional quality, so it doesn't do anything to fill you up. So if you are hungry and you eat nothing but sugar, you're not getting full. In fact, you're going to start getting more hungry, and you're going to start craving more carbs. So it does cause you to eat more. It leads to inflammation. Inflammation has recently been recognized as a leading cause of a long list of diseases, including cancer, diabetes, high blood pressure, and heart disease. Your body's organs, specifically your kidneys and liver, have to work extra hard to process the excess sugar you are eating, and that can create, you know, and cause the rest of your organs to slow down, which, you know, kind of leaves a door open for other diseases to develop. It also weakens the immune system, so it kind of goes hand in hand with what I just talked about. If you consume a lot of sugar, ask yourself, are you often sick? Because that could really be an indication that your immune system is compromised because of your sugar intake. It's expensive. Holy smokes, I can relate to this so much. There are some days where I'll just go into a grocery store and I'll buy like a big box of chocolate and spend, you know, $12 on it. And then I get it to my car and I eat four pieces and then throw the rest away. Like I can't even tell you how much money I could probably retire on the amount of money that I've spent on sugary treats. And it also leads you to make other poor food choices. Like when you're eating, like I talked about, when you're eating nothing but sugar, then you just crave other junk food. So, and this is all like hitting so close to home to me. So I'm not like on a soapbox preaching. I'm kind of venting more than anything. But this is all, you know, tried and true and have experienced firsthand. And lastly, it ages you. Like, it breaks down the collagen in your skin, which is responsible for keeping your skin looking tight. And when collagen breaks down, you start to see sagging and wrinkles. And so sugar just expedites that process. It just speeds it right along. So, you know, if nothing else, hopefully your vanity will help you from, you know, eating and indulging in too much sugar. Mine does on some days, other days it doesn't. So, again, not a super fun lettuce turn up the beat. No great recipes this week. But I think as we kind of head around the corner into Thanksgiving and the holidays, certainly, you know, moderation is key. Like, I don't advocate for stripping anything out of your life unless it's killing you, obviously, which I suppose some could argue that sugar is. But sugar is one of those where in moderation, it'll be okay. So as we kind of turn the corner heading into the holidays and Thanksgiving and Christmas and Halloween and all those things, you know, there's going to be plenty of opportunities to overindulge. So just, you know, keep a handle on it. Enjoy yourself, but don't overdo it.
And unfortunately, I think that's all of the show that we
that
have.
That is unfortunate. We just want to remind you of a couple of things that the Lighthouse has going on coming up. We've got our spooktacular Halloween fun house coming up on Saturday, October 28th from 1 to 3 p.m. in our Lighthouse North location up in Glenview, as well as
Sips Foresight, beer, wine, and spirits tasting, and it's all to help out the Lighthouse Children's Programs. And there is heavy appetizers. Complimentary valet parking is available. And it's at the Eric Cafe, 536 West Erie Street, 8:30 p.m. And you can contact Lindsay Inglis, our very special events manager, at 312-447-3448. Or you can email her at lindsay.inglis, I-N-G-L-I-S, at chicagolighthouse.org.
I like how you called her a very special events manager.
I just came right up
with that. That's so great. I love it. She's not just a special events manager. She's a very special events manager. Good for you, Bri. Way to be spontaneous. All right, that's it. That's going to do it for us. We want to thank, of course, Brett and Sandy for their contributions to this show, as always, with their wonderful and informative interviews. Also, many thanks to my friend and co-host, Brian Hawkins, who, you know, behind the scenes still puts this all together and does what he does, and now he's taken over role of co-host, so he's just a superstar. And many thanks as well to Dr. Janet Slick, who has stood behind us year after year. Yes. Coming into year 9, I think. We're running the corner into year 9, but we'll figure that out. We'll debate that later. So many thanks to all of you for listening and tuning in, and as always, and we will talk to you next week.